We know where we're going, but we don't know where we've been. And we know what we're knowing, but we can't say what we've seen. And we're not little children, and we know what we want, and the future is certain. Give us time to work it out.
Yeah. We're on the road to nowhere. Come on inside. Take a night ride to nowhere. We'll take that ride. The Talking Heads may be on the road to nowhere, but we know exactly where we're heading here at Midnight Munster from CinemaFromage.com. Welcome, ladies and gents, to episode number 14. This week, we're going to take a look at two of the latest direct-to-video horror flicks for you. One is Jack Ketchum's The Lost. The other, Uwe Boll's Seed. Both have their merits, both have their demerits. Be sure to stay tuned to find out why. In the meantime, if you have any questions or comments, please feel free to email us at cinemafromage@gmail.com or to follow us on Twitter at www.twitter.com/cinemafromage. We're out there all the time, folks. Come join us. So, again, we're going to jump into The Lost and Seed here in a minute. And we apologize for the time spent in between episodes here since episode 13. It's been busy around the Cinema Fromage headquarters. So this time I'm going to take the chance to remind you to always check us out at www.cinemafromage.com for the latest in reviews, mostly written, because the spoken reviews come here for you folks, and you're already here. Tell your friends and neighbors, be sure to leave us a review on iTunes if you like it. If you're liking what you see, be sure to check me out at bloodygoodhorror.com as well. I'm there every week on the Bloody Good Horror podcast, as well as all over the front page with some blog posts doing episode reviews for the Terminator Sarah Connor Chronicles Season 2, as well as Dexter Season 3 that starts this Sunday. So, again, be sure to check me out at www.bloodygoodhorror.com. So, here we go, folks. Back onto the road to nowhere with Jack Ketchum's The Lost.
Do you have a cigarette?
We had a murder a few years back. Two girls, campers.
You know what we ought to do? We ought to pop them.
What?
Ray wasn't our main suspect. He was our only suspect.
My son, Ray.
He's my assistant manager.
Bates Motel.
Hello, Mr. Pye.
Listen, the best way you can handle Ray Pye...
Hey, Ray.
...is to stay the hell away from him.
Maybe he came on to one of those girls back then and she said thanks, but no thanks.
Get your stuff and go home.
Fuck out of here!
That's why they're both of them dead.
What is he gonna do, murder me in the laundry room in broad daylight?
Good evening, Jennifer. I want you both to meet Catherine.
I'm a good girl.
Some of these women are animals.
You want to play a little game?
What kind of game?
I ask you a question. You have to answer it completely and truthfully, no bullshit. What's the worst thing you've ever done?
I like you and had a good time together. I just
don't think we should keep on seeing each other.
You want to be able to, like, fuck other guys? Is that, like, all the fuck you're saying?
Fuck!
Filmed in 2005 and not released until March of this year, 2008, came the latest big screen interpretation of Jack Ketchum's novels, which is Jack Ketchum's The Lost, starring Mark Center as Ray Pye, Shay Astar, Alex Frost, Megan Henning. This is the story of about a disturbed young man from a small town and his two sidekicks and many of the shenanigans they get up to.
Yeah, sort of. Pretty much in this movie, this adaptation of Jack Ketchum's book, I don't know, it just seemed very choppy throughout the whole thing as far as the whole plot line goes.
Extremely.
We understand that Ray Pye has, because from the very, very beginning, Ray Pye and his two friends happen to be at some campground, and he runs into and sees these two naked girls who, you know, were just kind of hanging out and sunbathing. And at first he's all, of course, being a male, turned on by the fact that there are two naked females sunbathing. And then he decides that they're a little too touchy-feely with each other and gets disgusted and decides that, you know, he might as well just go kill them. And that's pretty much it.
And that's pretty much our first introduction to Ray Pye. And he shows that, and it's not even that the fact that he thought they were getting too touchy-feely. They were actually, the one girl was, you could tell, they led you to believe that she's getting ready to out her love for her friend.
Well, you see, that's kind of where, because I started reading the book, The Lost. And in the book, it explains, because there's, as always, the book's always a lot better than the movie. In most cases. And this is one of those cases because you miss out totally on the fact that these two are actually cousins. And, you know, they're not lovers. They're not. The one girl just broke up with her boyfriend, and she's upset, and she, you know, her boyfriend was very abusive with her, and la, 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 la. And so she and her cousin are going on a trip together to, you know, kind of like when my cousin and I went on a girls' weekend. Granted, we didn't go, you know, strip naked and go sunbathing, but we did go to New Orleans, so, you know.
Now, the main viewpoint of The Lost, the whole point of it is the entire movie is a character study on Ray Pye and just how deranged he is. And from this very moment, and then we skip ahead 4 years, and we see as he's gone back to life as normal, despite the fact of what he's done to these two girls at the beginning of the movie that you see in the opening. And for him, it's life as normal, working as the custodian for his mom's hotel. He is a very manipulative person. He is very, he is a twisted leader to some respect, because yeah, his two friends that follow him around like puppy dogs are completely sucked into him. Tim is Tim runs drugs for him, does everything Ray tells him. Jennifer is Ray's pseudo girlfriend who he uses basically when he can't get laid anywhere else, and right, she's completely and totally under his spell and does anything.
Well,
that he
part
demands
of it is the fear, because they know what he's done, and they pretty much helped cover up the fact that this happened. And so
right, and this
they're
is something else.
They
this is something else that leads into from reading part of the book beforehand as well, is that they still were like that before this all happened too, though.
Right, they knew he had a violent streak. They knew that he was, you know, he was in control through the whole thing, and you know where Mark Center pulled off that. I found that the rest of the, I mean, other than his strong portrayal of this character and really, you know, showing his complete and total spiral from, you know, doing something as horrendous as that, trying to get back into normalcy, but still he's under the thumb of his mother. He's controlled by his, you know, obsession with being the top dog. The need to...
Not to mention the short man syndrome.
Yeah.
Because there's a thing at the beginning which shows... It does show up a couple times throughout the movie that they talk about. There's text that shows up at the beginning. Talks about Ray wore crushed beer cans in his boots to make himself taller.
Yeah.
Which affected his walk and his gait because of the pain from the beer cans and whatnot. But
right.
And it kind of leads to a bit of the short man syndrome that leads to some of the anger.
Well, it's his whole
too.
Inadequacy because... I mean, with the two girls who he's decided are lesbians, he feels now inadequate because he won't be able to satisfy them because they're lesbians in his mind. So, therefore, to get rid of that issue, he kills them. He feels that, you know, he's inadequate as the person who is supposed to be in charge of maintenance. He feels inadequate in his position and so on and so forth. And that just kind of keeps building up and building up till it comes to a boil. His way of releasing that is to try to seduce as many women as possible, to take as many drugs as possible, because that makes him feel special.
Right.
And,
see, and this movie's hard to talk about, too, though, because the movie itself has very many problems. The movie itself is, for myself, ultimately, was pretty awful. It was very boring, very dry.
It was.
Especially considering what you expected. But it's at the same time, it throws you off because Mark Center actually playing Ray Pye was actually pretty damn good.
Yes, he was. I think that was the only character that I felt actually went above and beyond in the movie, because all of the rest of them were, I mean, granted, maybe that's what they were trying to do, was to say, okay, he is the overpowering thing. But you have these police officers who are still trying to figure out what happened back 4 years previous, and apparently there was another murder that happened that they never really go into detail, and they're saying, you know, maybe he's involved in it, but they never really brought in anything into it.
Well, they
it.
Both had their definite suspicions that he did do it. They just couldn't find that what they needed to pin it on him.
Right. And, I mean, and it was just, there were too many storylines going in too many directions, because we had the one police officer who's bound and determined that Ray did this, and he wants to catch him. Okay, we understand that. Now let's bring that characterization and that storyline a little bit more solid and more together. But then they go off into the other direction with the other detective, Ed, and his relationship with, you know, his December, May relationship with young Sally, who's just now graduated high school and happens to be his partner's daughter.
Right.
You know? And it's...
It's not his partner's daughter. It's
is it? I thought it was his partner.
It's the old guy that you ran into in the pharmacy.
The pharmacy. Pharmaceutical daughter.
But they... The movie's just kind of a mess as far as the flow of the movie. Like we said, Mark Center was fabulous as Ray Pye. He really sold the role. He did a great job at that. It's just everything that was going on around him as far as the plot advancing and whatnot was just not handled well.
Right.
He, I mean, honestly, I would have loved to have seen him go apeshit on more people throughout the movie, which may not have been in the book. I don't know, because I never did finish it, because ultimately... The book is a
dry.
Lot the same way.
Yeah, the book's pretty dry, too. It just kind of, it slugs
right
along.
And, but let's see, we have, like, the detective who's sure that Ray did it was Michael Bowen, who we know as Buck from Kill Bill, who is also part of the Carradine clan. But he was, he's played this officer, and he did an all right job for as well for what he had to do. He was pale in comparison to Mark Center's portrayal. I mean, he did all right. We also had Ed Lauder, who showed up as the older cop who was dating the younger girl again. Mm-hmm. He did a decent job acting. There's just not much for him to work with.
Yeah, there wasn't. The storyline wasn't tight enough. It didn't really pull together properly.
What we come down to then is that it's a movie that's not very good, and it's not by any means the fault of the acting at all, because the acting was competent to where as Center went over, it's a fault of the writing.
Right. We also had Dee Wallace, who had a very brief role in it. She had a very small cameo as the mother of one of the girls that the one girl that she didn't die at the beginning. She was in a coma and she ends up dying. And that whole scene probably didn't even need to be in there.
Right, because they didn't go anything into any more depth with it, which the book had more of.
Yeah.
A little bit, and gives you more backstory on the cops. The cops are kind of thrown in here almost as an after effect, and essentially, really, the cops that they focused on didn't need to be in here at all.
Right.
Because they bring these in there, and they never really tie them off. They never really do with them. They're just kind of strolling around, being part of the scenery. Whereas if they would have cut this stuff out and focused completely on Ray Pye...
Well, even brought into it a little bit more of the cops, because Sally ends up being a focal point in the movie there close to the end. She's
right.
one of the people who he ends up abducting, and it, you know, honestly, her character probably wasn't even needed.
Yeah.
Either they should have either focused more on
because
her
there
relationship
was no right.
Or
because once we get down to where she is a focal point of Ray towards the end, she could have been any other girl
right.
in the city. It wouldn't have mattered because they didn't do anything with it. Now, the other problem with this movie here, too, is we were discussing these problems with pacing and plot and whatnot and how dry and drawn out it is. This movie runs almost 2 hours, and there's no reason it needed to.
Right. The relationship between, which one was it, Catherine and Ray... Catherine is new in town, and Ray falls for her in a way that he really hasn't expressed with other women, but then she ends up becoming just another one
right.
that he has the pent-up rage towards. I felt that they spent a little too much time on establishing that relationship and that connection.
Right. And the point, there was a point behind it, but like Colleen said, they just spent too much time going into it just for the fact that, and really if they would have shown less, it would have shown even better with him becoming so obsessed with her in such a short amount of time.
Right.
If they would have shown less, it would have been far more effective.
Yeah, this is one of those places where less would have been more. And it just, it drug out. It made it almost intolerable, hard to keep your eyes open during parts of it because it's like, okay, yeah, right, sure, you know?
Yeah.
And there was, you know, he tells the story of the cabin that he and his buddy wrecked and everything. They could have done a little bit more with that whole manic stage that he goes through.
Right.
In different portions of it.
And ultimately, with this movie, there's the very beginning of the movie was pretty good. I enjoyed. The very ending of the movie is pretty good.
Yeah.
I enjoyed. But the stuff in the middle is
it
just
was getting from point
to get
A
through.
To point B, which was almost intolerable. The beginning was excellent. There was a lot of, you know, you saw that passion. You saw all of the rage come out of him. You saw his, you know, the whole manic and animal-like instincts that took over. And then you saw that again at the end. But during the middle, other than every once in a while little brief spurts of rage here and there, and, you know, the rest of it was kind of mediocre. And not at all like the previous movie, the first one that we actually did when we were doing Irreconcilable Differences, we discussed his...
The Girl Next Door.
His book, Jack Ketchum's book, The Girl Next Door, which, you know, leaps and bounds over this. This
right.
movie. So if you're going into this movie as a Jack Ketchum fan, I suggest you stop there. And, you know, I would totally say for seeing Jack Ketchum's talents as far as his stories go, Girl Next Door goes above and beyond.
Right, because that one will actually scar you.
Yeah. Yeah, The Girl Next Door is extremely powerful.
So, and I think Colleen and I both agree that Jack Ketchum is definitely a... he's definitely a talent in the horror genre and is definitely a twisted person that likes to tell some twisted tales and does tell some good ones. This is one that's just off the mark because I believe the book was suffered a lot of the same problems.
Yeah. And
from what I did read of it because I couldn't get through the book.
Yeah, and that's hard for, that's not usual.
When Colleen doesn't get through a book, for me not getting through a book, that's pretty much, you know, standard practice. Colleen not getting through a book is an oddity, because I've seen this woman read, you know, like a 700-page book and say, that was awful.
Yeah, I usually, if I pick a book up, I'll finish it. But this was one that I got through most of it, and I was like, okay, I honestly cannot read the rest of this, because it's not doing anything for me. And I'll have to say the same about the movie. I would like to see more of Jack Ketchum's books get turned, you know, into film. I think that's wonderful when someone's book can get turned into a visual. But The Loss, I think, was just a little bit off the mark and really didn't pull through visually at all.
And I'm going to agree fully. It's just, the only thing I would go further is I really look forward to seeing Mark Center playing more villains.
Yes, yes, he did. And, you know, he played that manic role very well. Oh, and also, the gentleman who we know from My Name is Earl as Crabman plays a cameo as a drug dealer in this.
Yes.
And it was very interesting.
He was pretty much the crab man.
Yeah, he was pretty much the crab man. But it was fun to see him in this, you know, in a role of more, you know, where he wasn't a wide-eyed innocent as Crabman is in My Name is Earl. I really adore the guy. He's very funny.
Oh, and we also, though, to throw in there, too, because we almost finished this episode without bringing it up, there's another nice cameo in the beginning. Who is the first naked girl that we run into? Of course, she's naked. Is Misty Monday, also known as Erin Brown?
Yes, good old Misty Monday. Oh, she's I just get the biggest kick out of her.
Yes, Misty Monday is nearly a household name in this house, which is probably scary to some, but you know, we like her. She's a lot of fun.
Get a kick out of her movies. Her movies are just they're all spoofy, and they're all, you know, and granted, yeah.
Well, we say that she's actually branching out more into a lot more serious fare. This is like this is an example of her starting to branch out, but at the same time, she throws a cameo in here because she has a very big cult following.
Well, this is one of the movies that she's done as Erin Brown, that's her real name. It's not her stage name, which is Misty Monday. Misty Monday's movies are basically all, they're all porn, but they're all spoofy, fun porn, like Lord of the G-Strings.
Skinamax level porn.
Yeah, it's goofy stuff. And
The Sexy Adventures of Van Helsing.
Spider
Babe.
The
Vibrating Maid. Vampire Vixens.
She really does have a good sense of humor when it comes to
Dr. Jekyll and Mistress Hyde.
You know, where a lot of porn films try to become a little too serious.
Quite honestly,
she has a lot of fun with them. And they're actually porn movies that I actually really enjoy watching.
Quite honestly, if Shakarama would actually get my screeners to me that they're supposed to, we could we definitely will have a Misty Monday show in our future. So,
woohoo! But as Erin Brown, when she, you know, she really did come across genuine in that role. I thought she was the young girl who ends up getting killed by Ray. She really brought to the role, and you know, in the brief moments that we saw her, a genuine, you know, my boyfriend left me, should I go back to him? You know, the whole conflict thing. And I thought she pulled it off.
Well, and she's and really to tie it into the rest of the discussion with the dry parts in the middle, in the short time that she was on screen, she was actually one of the more engaging characters aside from Ray Pi.
Right. She actually had, you know, she had the presence. She was able to pull it off, whereas around her, it just seemed everyone else seemed so drab. And you know, that was kind of sad in this movie, because I thought that you have all these characters that actually could have had a little bit more charisma and brought a little bit more to the plate and actually maybe made this movie into a more entertaining film than it actually was.
There you have it, folks. Go see it for Mark Center and Erin Brown, also known as Misty Monday. Don't necessarily see it for being something exciting. So that's 2005's The Lost, written by Jack, based on the Jack Ketchum novel.
And the screenplay was by Chris Siversen.
Hey folks, Eric here from the Bloody Good Horror Podcast, and I'm here today to talk to you about decisions. Sometimes you have a noisy neighbor that you just don't know how to deal with. Maybe you've got someone tied up in your basement and you're not really sure how long you should leave them there. Or maybe you're having a tough time deciding what to do with the stray cat that's keeping you up all night. And that's why I'm here today, folks, because the decision to listen to Bloody Good Horror is an easy one. So do yourself a favor and check out Bloody Good Horror today. That's bloodygoodhorror.com, the one choice in life that's easy. Plus, we'll help you figure out where to bury that dead body you're driving around with. And don't worry, if you didn't see anything, neither did we.
I want you to kill him, and I want you to put him into a ground so he can never come back again.
He is dead, isn't he?
You buried him alive, man, and everybody knows it.
What do you want? What do you want?
Uwe Boll, derided by many as being such a horrible director, and in most cases, this derision is truthful. In 2007, he's actually taking his own original script, an idea, and put it to film in 2007's Seed. This is written and directed by Uwe, and it contains a little story about a serial killer in the 1979 who has done all sorts of atrocious crimes. They tried to put him to death on the electric chair, and he fails to die. Due to the text pop-up that we see at the beginning of the movie, we are known that normally if a execution doesn't work, as in if they are given 3 jolts on the electric chair and they're still alive, they're set free. In Seed's case, though, he was such a bad dude that they decided to bury him alive. And guess what? He wasn't happy about it, so he came back to enact his revenge. And that, folks, is the basic idea behind 2007 Seed from Uwe Boll. Now, this is a far different movie than you'd expect by Uwe. I gotta say, I've not been a big fan of Uwe's at all, as I'm sure many of my users would agree. He has some of his many past efforts, such as Alone in the Dark or House of the Dead, which had absolutely nothing to do with the game, and recent Postal, which I actually didn't mind. Check out Bloody Good Horror Podcast number 41 for details. Uwe Boll's Seed is turned out a little better than I expected. There's some issues here, definitely, but there's some things to like as well, which caught me off guard more than anything. So, first off here is we actually have a coherent story idea, a plot. While basic and somewhat formulaic, it actually is well thought out and, you know, makes sense most of all. Normally, we haven't seen anything original out of Uwe for quite a while, because most of it is hacked together from cliched video game plots. And now we got our own little slasher story. I do say formulaic. It's not that different from a your typical supernatural return from the dead revenge killer. And, you know, at the same time, we are all horror nerds, and we come to expect that to a certain extent. Now, some of the things I liked in here, the killer seed, it gave us really nothing to work with as far as to like him or anything like that. We'll get into more details later with the plot, but Seed himself cast a forbidding profile, did some pretty gnarly deaths, which was kind of nice. There was a nice scene with him and an older woman when he first came back from the grave, teasing her with a hatchet and taking his time and enjoying his work, which was kind of nice to watch. It was well shot. The gore was good. The makeup was good. Overall, surprisingly as good as it was. The problem here with Seed himself is there's no set motive. Jason had his machetes. Freddy had his claws. Mike Myers had his butcher knife. Steed doesn't have anything that's all his own. Even Leatherface had his chainsaw. Seed doesn't really have anything to call his own. He's just kind of got a mishmash of way of knocking people around and killing them. And as a matter of fact, as we see from the tape that was recovered by the police as they're first investigating the story, his typical route of death was to lock his victim into a cell and just leave them there to die of natural causes and starvation while videotaping them, which is gruesome in itself, but he doesn't really stick to it one way or the other. So, now, the problems I have with Seed, while the story does make sense, it takes some work to get through it. You kind of bounce back and forth. The first half of this movie, 45 to 50 minutes of this movie, is nothing but backstory on Seed and how he came to the prison and what they're arresting him for. But this problem is that it jumps back and forth throughout the timeline. Even in this beginning part, we jump from the cops investigating him, trying to find him. We jump to him sitting in his cell, trying to be raped by prison guards, getting ready to be put to death. We jump to another period with the warden freaking out over the electric chair because it is faulty and shoddy. Then the prison trying to get a new chair, knowing that they're going to have to execute Seed. So it kind of jumps around and it's hard to follow. Once we do hit that point about 50 minutes in where our main plot nexus is in the middle of the second act where he is failed to be put to death and they bury him alive and he comes back to life and starts his revenge. This is all well and good and this works well for the most part, but the movie's only an hour and a half long, so you really only get 40 minutes of all the good stuff, whereas the first 50 minutes of it is all confusing mishmash. So overall, Seed is an okay movie, and I honestly would say rent it. You might be surprised, even if it is Uwe Boll, you might be surprised at what you get, because it does make a lot more sense than any of his video game movies have made, and it's actually creepy in parts, and it's actually a fleshed-out character. I know I feel dirty saying it myself, but it's true. Other problems in this movie also come from the fact that the movie is shot so dark. I know it's shot for atmosphere when they're going through Seed's house trying to find him in the dark. They even make comments to the fact that it's so dark out and they can't see anything, which is well and good, but it doesn't work well for us viewers when we are trying to watch a movie and see what's happening and we can't see anything that's happening on the screen. And this is a problem throughout. There's chunks in this movie where Seed is beating people or they find stuff in the house and you honestly can't really tell what it is that's going on because the scenes are so dark, which is a problem in and of itself. Now, there's, just to go through a little bit of this here, there's a couple names here you would recognize, like Michael Paré. He's been in a few different Uwe Boll films. Actually, I think he's been in most of them. He was in Postal. He's in Blood Rain 2. He was in all sorts of good stuff there. Now, I'd say that loosely. He's been in some many other movies too, so it's definitely a face you would recognize. And I'm looking for some of the old movies in the past. Nothing jumps out for sure, like Village of the Damned in 95, going all the way back to the Philadelphia Experiment, Eddie and the Cruisers. He was Eddie and Eddie the Cruisers. He's in Greatest American Hero, because believe it or not, He wasn't walking on air. So that's a face you recognize. Also, we see a quick glimpse at Stargate's Don Davis, who died in the last year or so, which I always enjoy seeing Don Davis on the screen. It was nice to hear him drop some F-bombs for a change. He's usually pretty straight-laced and clean, so that's a different change. Other than that, there's not a whole lot of stuff going on here that we need to be that interested in as far as the actors go. Most of the people are there in the background. Michael Puri is our main character alongside Seed, and they're really the only ones we are brought to care about. And in looking through the credits on IMDb, Seed himself is played by Will Sanderson, who is been in quite a bit of things himself, mostly as voice actor, a lot of them. He was in Blood Rain as well, Alone in the Dark. So he is another Uwe Boll stalwart. So he's been in a lot of Boll's films too. He did an all right job. Basically, his job was to run around in a burlap sack and look menacing, which he did all right because he's a big dude. Other than that, there wasn't much else for him to do. Well, again, Uwe Boll's Seed. It's got a decent plot. It's a decently fleshed out character. There's some good gore and violence here, so if that's what you're looking for, check it out. I'm going to give this an official 6 out of 10 because of the problems with the plot in the beginning. And honestly, as dirty as I feel, it wasn't that bad.